Blog Talk Radio.
It's Sunday night, 8 o'clock. Welcome to the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio. This is your host, Brett, and with me is Alana. How you doing?
Hi, great.
So we've got one topic we want to talk about this week. We're going to discuss Astonishing X-Men 51, which has been in the news lately just because it is what's kind of dubbed the gay marriage issue, which features X-Men and Alpha Flight member Jean-Paul Barbier, I think is the last name, North Star getting married to his longtime suffering boyfriend, Kyle, in New York, which is great to see in a comic. I know my store had like a one copy per person. I don't know what it was like around you, but definitely getting people in the store. I know when I went in to get my comics this week, there was two gay gentlemen, clearly gay, kind of fawning over the issue. So I thought it was, I don't know if they're regular comic book readers from where they were talking, it seemed like they were, but it was awesome for them to be so excited about a comic coming out that they could relate to.
That's great. A friend of mine out in Kansas City said their local comic book store had a wedding party for the wedding, and a lot of folks came out to it, so it became sort of a social event as well as a comic book event. I think it's a great opportunity to bring more people into the stores, for sure.
Yeah, there was a lot of shops that were doing that. There was a few in New York that were doing marriages for any couple, so gay, straight, didn't matter. They had like a officiant and whatever else you need to do. I think all you need to do was license to actually partake, and that was about it.
Oh, that's great. That's great. I loved how the book treated this conversation with Kid Omega, where he's talking about all the things that happen at superhero weddings that are bound to happen at this one. And I love that this was treated as a superhero wedding. Like, this is just a superhero wedding. And it has great cultural significance, and they do talk about it. But in terms of what actually happens in it, it's a superhero wedding. Somebody's going to explode, or someone's going to come down with, like, what was it, like, 6 breasted Amazon. Like, they kept coming up. And in the end, they're it, you know, thankfully, they actually did get to do the I do part before being interrupted. But then, of course, something crazy happens after that. Like, it's supposed to in a comic book wedding.
So. Yeah. That was kind of, I flipped through it and read through it and thought the same thing. I was like, oh God, you know, what's going to happen? They're going to kick it off to the next issue or a couple issues from now, and it's actually not going to get resolved, and this is all kind of a hype. And no, it was like, and we were kind of discussing a little bit before, I thought the issue was actually tasteful and well done, and didn't use the fact that it was a gay, you know, same-sex marriage as kind of like tawdry as I thought it would be, as I don't even know how the best way of putting it, but it was actually just a normal wedding, like gay, straight, didn't matter. They just treated it as a normal superhero wedding, and there wasn't some, you know, focus of, oh, it's two guys getting married, we're going to do some over-the-top thing. Like, it was actually conservative in a way, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I think Marjorie Liu was a really excellent writer, and I think that she's the kind of person who put that sort of care and thinking into it, and I'm sure she did some groundwork research, talking to friends and stuff like that in the process. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. And I feel like she's been good on this book, period. I hadn't been reading Astonishing until she started writing it, actually.
Yeah, there was no reason to.
Yes, this is true. I felt that the box that his Aurora brought him of gifts was particularly touching. I audibly said, "Aw," when I read the list of the things, like, you know, Beast is the officiant and he's blue, so I didn't bring you any, so I figured you already had something blue. And it was just so sweet to me. And I'm not like a big wedding yay kind of a person, so it was the fact that I had that reaction to it on an emotional level was, you know, pretty, you know, kudos to the comic book. The other thing I thought was really such a wonderful and important touch was when Rogue is musing, like, I wonder if the relationship between my moms would have been different if they'd been able to get married. And I think it is so important for comics and any other medium to acknowledge the, you know, the LGBTQ characters who have been in the past of the comics, the history that's in there, that has always been written in there, and that has always sort of been silenced in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And to have her sort of call back to this relationship that for a long time was just speculated, and then they eventually were like, yes, that was, you know, a romantic relationship. And to sort of bring that relationship to some history is really important in the text. Really, really important. To me, that was a really important touch. I hate when people treat, you know, LGBT characters like it's something new. They've always been there. They were just silenced in the past.
Yeah, and that's like how it treated that, and then, I mean, there's this the history of North Star. I mean, for the audience who might not know, I mean, North Star was really kind of one of the first major out gay characters. I mean, there was a lot that you speculated about. I mean, the joke about Batman and Robin going on for decades. But it was a story that involved Alpha Flight and a homeless girl who had AIDS, and then finally North Star breaks down at the end of it. And I remember the panel of his like anguished look on his face that saying, you know, I'm a gay man, was amazing. And back then, you know, we're talking the height of the AIDS pandemic and just fear of, you know, if you touch a gay person, you're going to get AIDS. Like, that was such a groundbreaking thing and such a step forward back then. So,
who wrote that issue? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I don't. I mean, that was, we're talking.
It feels like we should all know. Like, I'm impressed that you've read that issue. And it feels to me like we should all know that image. We should all have that. Like, the way everybody remembers from Green Arrow, the Speedy is a junkie. Like, the way everybody, and also from Green Arrow, everybody remembers, like, when that guy tells off Green Lantern in Green Arrow, Green Lantern, when, like, the poor guy tells him off and is like, you're not paying attention to brown people. Like, there's some sort of social commentary panels that everybody remembers. And sadly, like, that isn't one that I visualize. I don't think I've actually physically seen it, even though I do know the story.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading Alpha Flight back then and really dug the series. And just, I don't remember why that image has stuck with me for the 20-plus years.
Because it's powerful. That's why it stuck with you, yeah. I hope that they reprint it. I think this would be a great time to reprint that. I think fans would pick it up.
Yeah,
I know I was
shocked. Like, I think that would have been a great thing to done at the back of the issue. It would have been to make it a double
issue
and have that. And what we were discussing is with North Star being like one of the first really out gay characters for any publisher, especially one of the big two. You know, 20 years later, this is one of the it's not the first gay marriage, but I would say the most high profile so far. You know, Kevin Keller being the closest with Archie, which much the
hype. That was really high profile.
Yeah.
Like the wedding between Apollo and Midnighter, like Apollo and Midnighter being a couple was really high profile. Them actually getting married was not made a big deal of.
Yep.
It was almost like an aside.
Yeah, but I wouldn't even call those, like, you had to be a real kind of hardcore.
Right. I mean, who was reading these books, right?
Right, where you could sit there and say, be like, this is an X-Men character, which I think has a little bit more impact than someone.
It has a lot of weight to it, yes.
Yeah. The fact, you know, series that you could.
Hello?
You there?
Sorry, yeah, I'm breaking up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I was saying with X-Men being such a series that kind of almost started off as commentary about the civil rights movement back in the 60s, moved into a great commentary about AIDS pandemic in, you know, late 80s, early 90s, has since turned into very much talking about LGBT, among other issues, has been, you know, for it to be in that a issue of that series has been great.
I mean, no, it's been so appropriate, and there's so much history in Marvel, specifically in the X-Men. There's so much queer subtext historically throughout comics, and it's been such a comic that's been so important to, especially the gay men that I know specifically. For some reason, seeming that more about gay men than gay women that I know. But those comics and those characters have just been really important to them, and the stories have. I mean, there's so much longstanding subtext and can as well as canonically hard to ignore relationships between characters in the past that it makes sense to have it happen in X-Men as well.
Yeah, and you know, reading through the issue, I mean, even I kind of went into it with the fear of just that it was going to be very preachy and be like, this is the normal, everyone should be happy about this. It takes the other side too, and just a couple simple panels. There's a 2-page spread with North Star talking to Warbird, who is of another alien race, who you can read what she says two different ways. Either she's not a fan of gay marriage in general, the same-sex marriage in general, or she's just not a fan of marriage as an institution.
Yeah, that was unclear to me.
Yeah, so just leaving that unclear I thought was very smart and was a great way of delving into that. And then I think it's Cannonball at one point was like, this is great to be here. I can't imagine how my grandparents would have reacted to this.
No, it was Alex Summers.
Was it Alex?
Which I think is the wrong character to have that with, but I think that was a reasonable panel to have. I sort of was like, really? That Alex Summers is going to say that? Does he know his parents? I can't remember what the current situation, what their family status is. But like, didn't your parents die? I don't even know what you're talking about. Cannonball would have, I think, made sense in some ways.
I got the issue next to me and I was just flipping through it. Yeah, and Cannonball makes sense in that he was just a Southern conservative, or I would consider, like, grew up in that Southern
rural
area.
Rural.
Yeah.
But also that he has parents. I'm unclear about Alex Summers stuff. I don't know. I don't remember what the current status is on that. So anyway,
good.
That was good. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of handled both sides.
But there's
not
both sides. There are no both sides of the issue.
Well,
there's
sorry.
Like people.
It addressed the.
It handled people. It handled different kinds of reactions to it. It acknowledged that not everybody has the same response. Which I don't think gave anybody an excuse for being that way. But it didn't act as if we're in some utopian future where people don't make judgments like that.
Yeah, I mean that was kind of my point, is that it acknowledges that there's people who don't like this still. And then there's that middle of people who are good with it, but it's not normal for them, so they're a little uncomfortable.
Which
is what I kind of took the Summers was just like, yeah, this isn't a normal thing to me. It's great that it's going on. I have no problems with it, but and I'll admit, I kind of fall into that at some point, where it's just, unless you're around it a lot, sometimes it catches you off guard. Not that there's anything wrong or you got issues with it. It's just like, I forgot this exists in the world. Sheltered lives. but I mean, overall, I thought that it was a solid issue, really good, very, it treated it with the respect that it should have. It wasn't,
if somebody who doesn't read comics regularly happened to pick up that book because they thought it was neat that there was a gay wedding in a comic book, I think that they would have walked away feeling pretty good about comics, actually.
Yeah. It was funny.
I thought the art was okay, not great, but okay. There were panels in it that I thought actually looked like somebody hadn't finished drawing, which is one of my complaints that I've had on a number of X-books lately, that I think have decent artists, but that there's certain panels that I think the artist didn't finish. Somebody's boss needs to, just give him an extra hour or something. I'm sure he could finish it if you just gave him an extra hour.
Well, I think it's part of the double shipping that a lot of these are now coming out twice a month and things are being rushed, but...
Oh, they need to not do that. I would really prefer things to be less sloppy.
Yes.
But anyway, I do think the art was of a quality that I don't think a non-comic fan would be like, ooh. And, it has a lot of the flaws that most comics have when it comes to lots of characters having the same exact faces. But at least, the physics of human bodies seems to be rather intact. It doesn't have, Liefeld syndrome or anything like that. Some of the line work is kind of good. And I don't know. I mean, some of the visual acting in it was a little bit grimacy, I guess. But there's some good compositions, I guess. So I don't know. I like the inker on this book, at least.
Did you get a chance to see one of the alternative covers?
No, I didn't.
So one of the alt covers is great. Now I was actually at a comic shop this week with my girlfriend and pointed it out. Was on the cover, it had all these other couples that married in the Marvel Universe. So you had
that was the alternate cover for this. Yes, I saw that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you've had,
and they just put them on equal footing with it, which I think was great.
Well, I actually took it a totally different way. So you had Reed Richards, Sue Storm, who almost got divorced over Civil War. And haven't had the best marriage in the world. You had Cyclops and Jean Grey. She's dead.
Right.
He wound up hooking up with her clone. He's now in a pseudo relationship with someone else, so that's a mess. You've got Storm and Black Panther, who I think are in couples therapy.
I don't understand how they ever got married in the first place. I don't know. Marvel's like, hey, you guys are black, you should get married. Like,
you've got Scarlet Witch and Vision, and if I remember right, she killed him.
Well, he also, like, he's a robot.
Yeah.
But no. I guess I shouldn't be so centralist about it. Nevertheless.
And then you had Hank Pym and so you had Ant-Man and Wasp, and, you know, he did wind up beating her at one point. So you had all these relationships where aren't...
It's bad. There are very, very few examples of people that are still together and happy. Because it's comics. It's a soap opera.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it does put it in that context as well.
And I actually turned to her and I was like, you know what would be the perfect ending to all this? Is that the same-sex marriage is the one that's the normal one that lasts forever.
That story's been used in some other mediums before. I'm trying to remember an example, but it certainly has been at least. But yeah, it really is like, you know, there's very few married couples in comics that don't have drama. You know, like in DC, like Ralph and Sue Dibny were really unique in that. Like people actually were like, you know what's noteworthy about the Elongated Man and his wife is they don't seem to have any marital troubles.
Yeah, isn't she dead
now? Yeah, because it really is like a soap opera. I'm sorry?
Isn't she dead now?
She's dead now. He's dead now, too, though. They're ghostly sex. Oh, wait, no, they don't even exist. I forgot. The New 52. History's been rewritten. Doesn't matter. Never happened in the first place.
True.
Whatever.
Very true.
But, you know, comic books are always going to have something go awry, which is, again, why I thought it was great that they got married before Wolverine exploded from the inside. I'm unclear exactly on what. I'm glad to see Karma in the book, incidentally. I think that that's a nice character to have in there with some good history. And is she a lesbian, or am I making that up?
I have no idea on that one. She's not one that I've... Yeah, I don't
know.
It'd
be great
if
he wasn't the only queer character in the book. Like, that would be great if there was more than one. I don't know where I'm getting that from.
And speaking of... So, queer and or gay characters in general, this week as well, kind of... was an Entertainment Weekly has this article about the new art of coming out and, you know, real, living, breathing actors and actresses about how they're dealing with... coming out in the public. And I thought it was interesting, you have both things come out the same week, and one's just like leapfrogged ahead of the other as to, you know, what's going on in the real world versus what comics thinks is going on in the real world. So Entertainment Weekly, to kind of sum up the article, is about how all these actors nowadays, like, you know, 20 years ago with Ellen, she was on the cover of Time and People and did the press tour, and it was such a huge thing and it made all kinds of news.
Yeah.
And nowadays, actors come out in a sentence, if they even come out in a sentence, or they thank their partner when receiving an award, and that's it. Like, no one really cares a whole lot. It doesn't make news. It's not the cover of People, Time, Newsweek. It's just a part of the story as opposed to being the story. And I thought that was an interesting reflection compared to Astonishing X-Men. Plus you had, DC Earth 2 Green Lantern, which that was the story. And I'm wondering, is it going to be, since it's about, you know, 20 years behind, is it going to be another 20 years when comics catches up to this, where a character is gay and that's just part of who he is, and it's not a huge news. It's just, oh, when he goes home, his boyfriend or her girlfriend is there, and it doesn't make news. And
Also, actually, like, thinking about it, I mean, one of the most important pop culture websites, or at least at one point, maybe, I don't know if it is anymore, pop culture websites, like, you know, in the gay community, is After Ellen. It's afterellen.com is the name of the website. So that sort of gives you, if you're unfamiliar, like, this sense of how significant that moment was in popular culture. It's like the BCE of coming out in pop culture, like After Ellen and Before Ellen, basically.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I remember that being a big deal. Like, was it going to destroy her career? You know, how is her series going to do? As opposed to now, you've got, you know, Chris Colfer on Glee, and he's just been winning awards. You had Zachary Quinto come out, and no one, I don't think I saw one thing of being like, Scott Spock's gay. Just no one really, it's not the story anymore.
Right, it's not the story. I feel like if there's long established actors who've been closeted and they come out, that becomes a big story. And again, but the interest that people have is this like morbid disgust sort of at the cover-up, quote-unquote. So that's actually the story more than that someone is gay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, that was an interesting, and it was brought in that there's kind of an understated rule in that if you're living your life honestly, like whether or not it's open or it's just you are a gay actor or actress and, you know, you're not trying to hide anything, the press doesn't care, and that the press now are just going after the people who are full of it and will admit who they are, and that's where they're kind of keeping their focus. And reminds me of politics, and I forgot what site it is that goes after all the closeted politicians.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's Ross Story has certainly done it. Yeah, I think America Blog has. I mean, but, you know, yeah, certainly if you're a person in a position of power, you have a responsibility, you know, especially if you're somebody who's passing laws that hurt people who are minorities. But anyway, you know, it's definitely a huge cultural shift in here. I mean, one of the things that I think is incredibly impressive in now in comics is that you have more LGBT characters that are teens. And rather than even dealing with the fear of, oh, they're corrupting young people, it's like, no, young people are gay and lesbian and transgender and all kinds of things, and that's how they are. So to have characters like that, you know, I think is pretty impressive, actually. To me, that's almost more impressive than there being a gay wedding.
Yeah, so...
Adults are so weird about kids. Adults are so weird about kids.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
You know?
It was a kind of fascinating. And then it has the whole... I mean, not that it applies to comics, but there was a little discussion of these people who have come out and then they take a step back and they're like, no, I'm really not out. Because for whatever reason, they're, you know, their press PR people are telling them, you know, that's what they need to do. But as a whole, like, just the comparing of the two, I think is just fascinating in that you have, they're both entertainment, you know, but people tell the stories, you know, no one cares that Jim Parsons is gay on Big Bang Theory. The man's still brilliant in his acting and his ability. Neil Patrick Harris, only his career seems to have exploded since he's come out.
Yeah.
You know, for when it comes to entertainment, they're like, that's just not the news. And I'm waiting for that in comics, and I'm wondering when that's going to happen.
Yeah.
Where it's just going to be, you know, Alan Scott goes home and or is traveling wherever, and there's his boyfriend, not
well,
Alan
you know
Scott's
what?
A gay man. Yeah.
I think they would have handled that way if they didn't feel like they were in competition with Marvel's Gay Wedding. I think if Marvel wasn't coming out with a big wedding story, Alan Scott would have just been gay and there wouldn't have been a press release.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I kind of wonder that too, was a lot of that, was it in reaction to Marvel's announcement and DC was just piggybacking on it, in which case if they are, you know.
I mean, like, the writer's reason for making Alan Scott gay is a good reason, and it seems authentic, and I believe that he probably, you know, as soon as just, you know, okay, there's no more of City, and there really should be another gay character, why not have it be Alan Scott? Like, good thinking, right? I mean, I would have been nice for it to be a character who had some history of fans believing that character, reading that character as gay in the past, to sort of honor that fan knowledge. But, you know, being upset about the fact that you don't have his gay son anymore is a decent excuse to have, you know, him be gay. But I do think that became a press thing because they were in a gay arms war. And gay arms race for press with Marvel, which is a great way to be in a arms war, really. I mean, like, if you're trying to compete over who's going to be more modern and accepting rather than trying to compete over who's going to have more explosions or more stupid crossovers.
Yeah, I mean, remember the day when it was a struggle to get a character who was, you know, lesbian or gay or bisexual, trans or whatever, and now you have two major companies, like, fighting over it as to who's got the cooler gay character.
If only they would fight over who has the better written female characters and the more diverse staff hiring and the wider array of kinds of subject matter. But it's a start. It's a start. It's a start.
Yeah.
No, it definitely has been an easier month, I think, to be a comic book fan because of the profile that this has brought to the medium, I think. It's been positive. It's definitely gotten more people talking about comics as something which isn't just for kids, which is nice. Of course, it'd be great if comics also treated themselves as being something which are also for children. But that's another topic that we've discussed on the show on occasion.
Yeah, the other thing that kind of got me thinking is, so Titan Books sent me a review copy of their series Spandex, and it's the, like, you know, they kind of jokingly call it the first gay, all-gay superhero team. And you've got these you got these companies like Northwest Press, Prism Comics, you know, entire companies dedicated to LGBT and some great books out there.
Which are the good ones? I'm curious.
So the ones that I've read that I've actually, you know, I've chuckled at, there's one called, a lot of them come from Prism and Northwest Press. And I get them, as, you know, to review and check out. And there's ones like, what's it called? Glamazonian, I think it is. Is like a transgendered Amazon. It's just funny to me. I thought it was really entertaining, and I got chuckles out of it. A Waste of Time, which was a collected, I think, of a web series, which I thought was a good read. There's one they just sent me called Bold Riley, Legend of Bold Riley, that I haven't had a chance to read, but I flipped through the artwork, and I thought it was really good.
Great.
Spandex I thought was good. The art I kind of was like, you know, it's okay. It's not necessarily my thing, but I thought the story was hilarious. In their first battle, they fight this giant monster, and they figured out that it was a lesbian and how to defeat her by the fact that she was wearing a torn Indigo girl shirt, which I thought was, I mean, just played off of like stereotypes and was just, I thought was very humorous. And I mean, if I was these companies, I would be banging my head against the wall being like, where's been our coverage of being doing this for like decades? And it'll be interesting to see, like, do they get a boost? I mean, they're always at conventions.
They will when people, they will with, like, you know, if you, when you and other folks who've reviewed their comics who are also reviewing more mainstream titles, like, talk about their comics and say that they're good. Or if a comic book store put a display of those near where they put Astonishing 51, that would be doing them a fantastic favor, absolutely.
Yeah, and I looked at all the shops I went to, none of them had, like, here's other LGBT books that you might like. You know, pairing, you know, having Astonishing and having Batwoman would have been smart. Spandex, I can understand because it's not the most high profile book out there.
But if you were trying to promote more independent comics, that would be a good way to do it. I guess the stores aren't really trying to do that, unfortunately. But
yeah, I mean, it's interesting.
They're always
like,
talking about how we need to promote them, and I never really read anything, but you get the idea.
Yes. And I'm trying, I mean, I'm thinking of other of the other great, like, LGBT characters are out there. Batwoman, of course.
I've been really, I mean, I've been talking up a storm, as you know, about how great Demon Knights has been, and, you know, they have a transgendered character in it, and another character who I think is probably a lesbian, but I'm not sure, probably is, and there's two characters who just were introduced. They're not primary characters, they're secondary characters who are a lesbian couple. And, I mean, that's such a wonderful book. And it's doing such a good job, I think, with the trans character. If only the artist was doing as good of a job drawing the character so that it wasn't, didn't look like he was wearing lipstick, that would be pretty cool if the artist could do that. But anyway, but the writing for it has been fantastic. So that, I definitely cite that as a great example.
All right, I'll have to check out the trade.
Yeah, I know. Look, I'm telling you, there is only one monthly comic book that I've gotten my boyfriend Frank to read every month, and it's Demon Knights. That is the only one of my comics that he picks up every month and reads, out of all the books that I have lying around the apartment. So,
interesting. I've been doing the, not to go on a tangent, I've been doing the, oh, you should check out these books to my girlfriend, and who has read comics in the past, but it's not her regular thing. Mm-hmm. She loves reading. I started off with Day Tripper, which was probably not the best idea. She was like, I understand why it's really good. She goes, it was also like reading, you're getting punched in the gut whilst watching someone kick puppies every issue.
Got it. which ones are working so far?
I gave her Day Tripper, which she understood, she liked. Lock and Key, she loved. Loved Lock and Key. I have Why the Last Man in her hands. She hasn't read it yet. I'm convinced once she reads the first one, she's going to whip through the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be right up her alley as to what she would enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
That's it so far.
I'm always curious about that, yeah. I have to tell you, if I lived with somebody who had massive quantities of comic books lying around, I would read all of theirs because they were free. But I guess I'm a comic books fan, so it doesn't really reflect other people's actions.
Yeah, well, right now she's got, let's see, we've got about two bookcases worth of trade paperbacks sitting here.
Nice. So, yeah, I mean, Frank buys Conan, the Dark Horse series. He buys the trade paperbacks of that every time a new one comes out, and he reads my Demon Knights issues. And I've made him read a few things here and there that he's liked, but he hasn't. Like, of the things that are coming out now that I buy single issues of, but he doesn't go and, like, try to read those. So, anyway, I do continue to think that that's probably the best book that no one's talking about that's out right now.
Demonite?
Actually, the other best book that no one's talking about that's out right now is Journey into Mystery. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great series. At times it's a bit wordy for me, but I really, really like it.
I'm really good with wordy comics, so that might explain partially why. I just think the art is so beautiful and creative. The characters are so well created, distinct, unique, and touching. The stories are exciting and really creative. And when it's funny, it's really funny. Really, really, really funny.
Yeah, I mean, the reviews each issue, when it kind of sums up what's been going on before, has been excellent. I thought it was
hilarious,
yeah. The writing is fantastic of it. It's definitely one that you have to spend your time to read. Like, it's a thick book for what it is, which I don't know what it says about normal comics, that's the way it is. But yeah, I mean, it's good. Like, that's a great series to check out. I think it's doing, you know, it's doing what it does, and solid. Like, it's a solid, good comic. That one everyone should be checking out. I'm trying to think what else is up there. Yeah. Any other ones that you can think of that you're recommending? I've been going back and reading old stuff.
Oh, you mean best comics that not everybody's reading? Is that what you're
recommending? Or just generally what you're recommending.
Oh. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm reading more X-books now than I've read since, you know, it was the 90s and I was a tween or whatever. Or actually teen, really, whatever. I mean, I'm reading Uncanny, I'm reading Astonishing, and I'm reading Wolverine and I'm reading X-Factor. That's a ton of X-books.
Yes.
Right? So they're doing something right. And I still am not touching any AVX thing. And can't wait for that dumb thing to be over. I have to learn through context clues, I guess, that the Phoenix thing has been absorbed into other characters. I don't know. Whose idea is that? I
don't know. I still think it's...
just like, I'm sorry, like, the stakes are built up. Either you have, like, hope go crazy and bad, or hope somehow contains it. Like, that's what you do. I don't know, maybe it's so differently had I read all of those people punching each other in the face with no plot books, but I don't know. The sooner that can be done, the better. And it cost me Generation Hope. I really loved that book.
Yeah. I wasn't as big of a fan of it. Towards the end, I thought I got really, really good, but the beginning, there's points where, like, there was just some issues that kind of would roll my eyes and be like, I'm not digging this.
No, I agree. It wasn't at its strongest right away. It could take some time. I'm still really upset that Kenji turned out bad. I really liked Kenji. I did not want Kenji to turn out evil.
It was a different...
Karen Gillen, why?
It was a good, it was like a different character, which I thought was pretty decent. Having him turn evil did not shock me.
I really wanted there to be room for this character who had a wildly different worldview than everyone else, but who wasn't evil.
Yeah.
I mean, in a way, like, Laurie sets up, like, Laurie has a wildly different perspective on being a hero and on power and on your responsibilities and on free will than Hope does, but Laurie does not really have the strength of her convictions in a lot of ways. Kenji really did, and I really did not want him to turn out to be evil because I wanted there to be space in it for that to happen. I mean, I was glad to see Martha Johansson stick up for herself. I mean, I'm a big Martha Johansson fan, but I loved that relationship, too. Oh, my God. I loved his relationship with the disembodied brain. That's, like, wonderful. So comic book.
So out there, but so entertaining.
They're the second sentient, you know, bipedal being in love with a telepathic brain couple in comics. This is also Monsieur Mala and that that brain in the jar from Doom Patrol. So
I'm never
a
Doom Patrol fan.
For that. I'm sorry?
I was never a Doom Patrol fan, so that reference is completely over my head.
All you need to know is there's an evil French monkey, and it was in love with a brain in a jar. It was also a gay relationship. So.
Okay.
This is wonderful. How can you not love this? I don't understand you, Brett.
Well, it sounds entertaining. Just I never read Doom Patrol. Clearly, I should.
Clearly.
So speaking of teenagers, good mm-hmm. teenagers, I don't, well, it's kind of a tangent from comics, is I saw Brave on Friday.
Oh!
Which I have to say, like, you want to talk about a strong female, like, good character, there you go. Like, that's how you do it.
I'm going to see it. I am going to see it. I just haven't yet.
I'd be very interested in seeing what you have to say. It's a teenage girl, so there's points where I'm sitting there being like, wow, what a brat. I kind of want to smack her. But it's like, oh, yeah, she's a teenage girl.
Teenage girl.
She's exactly what she should be. Which also I kind of walked out of it being like, where's this in comics? Where's the Brave spinoff? But two, like, why don't you see writing like this? This was not that difficult for a story.
Right. Well, I've been watching Legend of Korra, Avatar Legend of Korra. Have you been watching the show?
No, I'm not.
You need to watch the show. You need to stop what we're doing right now. You need to watch Avatar The Last Airbender on Netflix streaming, and then you need to start watching the show Legend of Korra. I have not seen the finale yet. It aired yesterday. But the show is doing such a wonderful job of having a female protagonist with a unique personality, a completely believable personality. Actually, they successfully, one of my pet peeves are having strong female, physically, strong female characters who don't have any actual muscles. She does, because if you practice martial arts a lot, you tend to have muscles. I know someone should probably tell DC Comics and Marvel that. But anyway, so the art is beautiful. The soundtrack is some of the best TV soundtrack that I've ever heard in my life. The writing is really fantastic. I have a hard time putting a finger on the proper age range for the show, really. It definitely skews older than the initial Avatar series, but it's still, completely friendly for kids and all that. But it tackles real political issues. There's been some excellent writing about it, actually, on Think Progress on their culture blog, which is mm-hmm. by Lisa Rosenberg. Folks should really go do a Google search, go to Think Progress blog, go and look at their coverage of Avatar. Definitely read that, but read it after. Well, read the one before the show to make yourself convinced that you need to watch it, and then go and read the commentary afterwards. But it is wonderful. It is one of the best things on television that I've in ages, absolutely ages.
Nice. That's okay. I will have to go check it out. At least check out an interview.
I'm sorry.
I've heard great things about it. I mean, how much do you have to know of Avatar before watching that?
You don't have to. I feel like there's a lot of things that are special that you would enjoy more if you have, but you don't need to, especially if you're a comic book fan, because, like, you understand how rules in fantastical universes work if you're a comic book fan, right? So I think if you're a comic book fan, it'd be easy to just start watching it. There'll be jokes that you won't get, and there'll be flashbacks to things that you're not going to quite. But you'll be fine. The series, though, especially the first series, had such soul in a way that so few things for children and so few television shows ever really achieve. It's really spiritual in a non-corny way, and just a deeply compassionate show that treats its villains and heroes with respect, and everybody in it is humanized, and that's so rare to see in a kids' show. And anything, really. And a lot of times you'll have bad guys who are, the anti-hero. But in this you'll have people who are bad, but you see, the culture that creates these behaviors the show has a lot to say about, actually, tolerance and diversity in a non-corny way, which is hard to find. It's certainly big for kids. So, anyway.
Interesting.
I actually just picked up they have a couple graphic novels of the original series, actually, that are out, and I just picked up the first one of them, and I'm going to give it a read. The author, you'll be happy to know, is the person who wrote American Born Chinese, which is Eisner Award winner Jean Luang Yang, who mm-hmm. I've heard wonderful things about. So I'm sure the book will be awesome.
Yeah, they Dark Horse put out a notice that I guess their latest book was number one on the New York Times charts, I think.
The latest
Avatar.
What was number?
Their Avatar comic.
Oh,
I'm pretty
wow.
sure it's Dark Horse. Yeah, so
quite
a few people are taking notice. So it's definitely one I've got sitting around. I just haven't read it because Avatar has never been something I've been really into. So.
Yeah, I'm not really super into Japanese stuff, and it doesn't have. I mean, there's martial arts, absolutely, but it doesn't have. It's written by Westerners, and it feels like it's written by Westerners. I guess Westerners have a good amount of knowledge of Eastern mythology, I suppose. I'm glad to hear that the comic is selling well. I mean, there needs to be more cross promotion and. About these things, you know. I'm curious, actually, how I've been really loving the Adventure Time comics as well. I'm curious, like, you never see any ads for them, of course, when you're watching the cartoon on TV. There's never any ads for the comic books. I wonder if there's any web ads or some other way that a kid who's watching this cartoon would find out that there were comics about it to be bought.
A lot of traffic to the site's coming from queries having to deal with that. So, people seem to be just looking up for Adventure Time, but I have no idea. Adventure Time's something completely over my head. I have no idea what it is. I've never watched the cartoon series. I just know it's this popular thing and drives a hell of a lot of traffic to the site. So,
Got it. Yeah, no, it's a wonderful creative thing and great for children, absolutely. But I really seems like you have these TV shows that are a perfect excuse. I mean, this is one of your common themes, Brett. You know, these TV shows and these other cultural products that are hugely popular that have comics of them and that no one actually tries to tell fans that there's comics of them. Speaking of which, did you ever end up seeing any acknowledgement anywhere in any movie theater of any kind that comic books exist with relation to this Avengers movie?
No.
Yep. Marvel, seriously, what the fuck? And it's not too late for DC to do this. You know, the new Batman movie isn't out quite yet. They might consider maybe putting a display of books to sell or a promotional, like bring this coupon to this comic store to receive a discounted whatever. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll get with the program.
There was a couple stores I saw that did some promotions around with local theaters, but. That's about it.
Did the comic book store promote the theater, or did the theater promote the comic book store?
Well, they went and had a display up in the theater.
Oh, they did. Oh, that's great.
But that was individual stores. Yeah, so that was individual stores taking it upon themselves to do that.
Right.
There was no mass promotion that I saw from Marvel having anything to do with that. I don't even remember if there was anything on the site, like on the movie. Like, at least DC had that crappy URL that actually didn't work.
I know. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
For folks who don't know, when there was it in the Green Lantern movie?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Just tell the story.
Yeah, so to promote comics, DC had a URL that was, I think, at the end of the movie after the credits. It was like, hey, you want to read more? And the URL was like www.read.dccomics.com, which isn't going to work. So if you actually follow the instructions to go to the URL, it was like a broken 404 page. It was like beyond fail. It was one of the funniest things I saw, though. That alone was maybe made it worth going to see Green Lantern.
As a marketer, how do you let that happen?
I have no idea. But yet,
by the same token, none of the other movies have even said that. They don't even acknowledge. The closest Marvel does to acknowledging the existence of comic books in their movies is the opening Marvel Studios thing where they show, the old printer's dots scrolling through as somebody flips comic issues. That's it. So it's very stupid.
Yeah, I mean, the one argument I have heard from one person who was involved with a lot of tie-ins to TV and movies and stuff like that, their comment was people want their entertainment where they want their entertainment, like putting up comics next to the DVDs, they just don't sell. Like, if you were to put it in Walmart, because when parents go, they want to buy the DVD for the kid. They don't want to have to sit there and read the comic to the kid. Which was interesting, but still, like, putting up a URL in a movie doesn't cost anything.
Nope. Absolutely.
So, yeah. And it's just a failure. It's such a failure. But yeah, we'll see. We got Spider-Man still. We've got Batman. Maybe Judge Dredd is the one that gets it right.
I have no interest in seeing the new Spider-Man movie because I don't want to watch another origin story. I'm so bored of origin stories.
Only reason I want to see it is because the 3D him swinging through, I think, is going to be pretty cool. Like
yeah,
park
I can't
ride.
Do 3D
That's about
anyway.
It.
I wear glasses. I can't do 3D. I got glasses. It just doesn't work. But like, I don't know. I Alyssa Rosenberg actually on TikTok has been great about how, you know, we really need to stop with all the exposition movies that tell you everybody's origin story because in doing it over and over again, it doesn't let you tell any more stories or any deeper stories or any new stories to keep doing that. One of the reasons that the Avengers movie was so successful is it didn't have to origin story anything. So you got to just actually tell a story.
Yeah.
And honestly, there's no need to do a Spider-Man origin story because everybody knows his origin. Or you could at least do it in, like, 2 frames. I mean, you don't need a Spider-Man origin story. And hell, you don't need a Batman one either. Everybody knows that happened too. So,
well, I liked how they did in The Hulk, the redone one with Edward Norton, where the origin was all of like 2 seconds in the beginning and kind of ran through it during the actual credits in the beginning. Like, that was it. Done.
Oh! That's a good way to do it, actually, yeah. I mean, I didn't see that movie, but that sounds like a good way to handle it. So. But yeah, I think we deserve more interesting stories, and we'll get that when they stop teaching us today, like, how someone got their powers. You know?
Yeah.
I'm done with that.
Cross my fingers. We'll see. But the tracking for the movie is really, really good. There's predictions that it's going to do $125 million, I think.
Wow. For the Spider-Man movie?
Yeah.
Huh.
Which is pretty huge. So we'll see. Cross my fingers. Really cross my fingers. I'm not keeping my hopes up, but yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah. And I didn't realize there was a Judge Dredd movie coming out. I know some folks are going back to reading those issues now from the 80s. They acquaint themselves.
Yeah.
That's the ugliest character design in the history of mankind, but I guess that's kind of the point. It's kind of the point, right?
Yes, I think so.
Oh, so freaking ugly. But I don't know. I mean, I hear, my understanding is that it actually talks about some interesting socio-political issues in the comic.
Don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's not something I've really read a hell of a lot. I caught issue here or there. I was never a big Judge Dredd fan, so maybe, you know, I'll check it out with the movie coming out.
I think I sort of always took it to be like a Punisher type thing, which I find really politically abhorrent and also uninteresting. And then somebody was like, "No, Ilana, it's like RoboCop. It's a critique of that." And I was like, "Oh, well, if it's a critique of that, of the police state, then I'm interested." So I suppose I'll go back and try to find some of the old compilations, compiled books. Oh, speaking of this, randomly in the comic book store, we were flipping through. Frank pulled out a compendium of Predator comics that must have been from the early 80s. At least the art looked like it was. I don't remember when the first Predator movie came out, to be honest, but the art was wonderful. I was quite surprised. Very, very period, but really well done. I should have gotten a note of which collection it was.
It had to have been Dark Horse. They were the ones, I think, were doing Predator back in the day.
But, like, this is way back in the day. Like, you don't remember this because we were too young to read this when this came out. We were alive, but we were not reading comics. We were, like, 4. I don't know.
I want to say Predator was always done by Dark Horse, but I could be wrong.
Okay. Well, anyway, it looked really beautiful. It reminded me of, wow, he just died. Help me out here. Single name, heavy metal.
Mobius?
Thank you. Yeah, it reminded me of Mobius's work a lot.
Interesting. I really have to figure that out. I remember the old Alien stuff being really, really good. I mean, Dark Horse stuff back in the day was amazing. They're old Star Wars, Alien, a lot of their books just was, they had a certain look to it I thought was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, their stuff nowadays is great. Speaking of the comic thing, you should absolutely check out.
Their Conan stuff is great. Yeah.
If you, if there's a book you absolutely need to check out, I can send you the review copy of it, is The Massive, which is being done by Dark Horse. It's Brian Wood's new comic. It's about a world post-environmental disaster. So there's a little bit of talk about, you know, politics, environment, stuff like that, but it's just this, I don't even know how to describe it. I kind of finished reading it and being like, oh my God, this is so good. I immediately wanted to read the second issue. It was just easily, to me, one of the best books of the year.
And it's called Massive? I'll definitely check that out.
The Massive, yeah.
Great.
Yeah, it's really, there was like a prelude to it that kind of hinted at what was coming. Like the main character worked for like a Blackwater sort of company, and then he goes on a mission, and all hell breaks loose due to the environment, and his like entire worldview changes. It's really cool, and
that
it's just
really great.
Yeah, he's a captain on a boat, and they're looking for their other ship called the Massive, and it's just a world where like the water has risen due to all these natural disasters, and like entire cities are destroyed, and there's pirates going all over the place. It's just so fucking good. So good.
Wow. Brian Wood is a wonderful writer, so that definitely sounds like something I'd take a look at.
Yeah, I mean, his stuff that I would recommend, like, I don't think I've ever read anything that he's written that I've disliked.
Yeah. Yeah, I would have to agree, too, actually. I haven't read a ton of his stuff, but everything I've read I thought was really excellent.
Yeah,
I hear he's a mensch, too, which is always nice.
I mean, Demo, I thought, was fantastic. Channel Zero, which Dark Horse reprinted recently, was fantastic. It's just a main female character, like dystopian future, you know, fighting the man sort of stuff. Really, really good.
That sounds promising.
Yeah, I mean, DMZ, all the stuff is just fantastic.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could do an entire show on Brian Wood and why his work is amazing.
We should do a show on Brian Wood. We should see if we can get him to come.
I'll roll a dice. Let's see if we can get him. Brian Wood, if you're listening to this, we want you on the air.
Yes. We'll have to look. He must be on Twitter. We'll harass him on Twitter. That always seems to work for me, actually.
I'm good with that.
Totally.
So we're going to...
I love creators for responding to questions, you know?
It's
wonderful and appreciated.
Yes. So we're kind of wrapping up. I know you wanted to get out somewhat early. True Blood's on in a little bit, so I've got no problem with that. newsroom tonight for everyone. We want good writing. Aaron Sorkin.
Ugh, I hate Aaron Sorkin.
Really?
Each his own. Yeah. Well, for one thing, he was totally anti-Writers Guild, which is his own darn union, because he thinks that everybody is equally successful to him and therefore doesn't need anyone standing up for their right to have health insurance or pension payments, or residuals for their own work. So seriously, that's like so out of touch. It's like, you're like the most successful person in the industry, so of course you don't need a ton of help. Think about everybody else, okay, asshole? I haven't really liked much of the stuff by him I've seen either, to be honest with you, but I know many people who have good taste who do like his work, so I'll cut you slack.
Are you not a West Wing person? You might be the first political, like, anyone that involved in politics that I know is not, like, in love with the West Wing and walk, like,
that was okay. I only watched a few episodes. It was, you know, I felt like a lot of its politics were, like, politics for children, which I guess is what you have to do on television.
It was oversimplified, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I don't know. I mean, it's good actors and a little bit of, like, there was a sort of a pornographic quality to how people were watching it during the Bush administration to not think about the Bush administration. But anyway. But yeah, it's okay. Go watch the show or whatever.
Okay, I'll be watching Newsroom.
Yeah.
And then True Blood is on, and I know tons of people love their True Blood. So, yeah. Anything else?
See you guys next week. Yeah.
Yeah.
See you guys next week.
Yeah.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yep, appreciate everyone listening, and have a geeky week.